into a restaurant and everybody knows his name. And I just remember as a child going into restaurants and we'd be sitting at a table and this individual would just speak up and start asking people if they knew Jesus and that, did you know Jesus loves you? And would always have something to talk to people about. And it was just always a great example for me in my life. And this morning I want to introduce my dad, Bill Wilson, who's the pastor of Portland Christian Center in Portland, Oregon. And all those people that were up here this morning, for the most part, were from Portland as well. And so it's great to have them with us this morning. It's great to have my dad here, Bill Wilson.
Wow, what an invitation to come and what an introduction by the most beautiful blonde in the building. I also have another daughter here, so she's beautiful as well. Good to see all of you. Thanks for sticking around for chapel today, because I know many of you were tempted to cut out and leave, but I'm glad you found out I was speaking and you decided to come, and I appreciate that. That means a lot to me. And it's nice to have the band here. Most of the band members here today are from our Connection Band, which is a contemporary service we have on Sunday nights. We've taken our Sunday night service and changed it. And Trent Maddox is one of our associate pastors, and he led the group this morning. Great job, Trent. Thank you so much for making the effort to be here. And his wife is with him today, Pamela, who is celebrating her birthday this morning in chapel at Northwest College. Isn't that something? Congratulations. Good to have you all here. And thanks to those who are here. Now, Kim Wilson and Josh Strickler are from our church, and they're attending school here, and we good to see them. I should say Kim Kirkland. She got married and changed her name. It's nice to have my mom and dad here as well, and appreciate them making the effort to come. Hey, if you have your Bibles, how many of you have your Bibles with you? Turn to the person next to you who has a Bible and say, you really impressed me. And let's, for a few moments, I'd like you to take your Bibles and find the first book of the Bible. Hopefully you know where that is, the book of Genesis, and I'd like to share from the 39th chapter. I want to thank Dr. Argue for inviting us as well, and all those who are involved, and the professors that are here this morning. I commend you for coming. And in just a moment, when you found the 39th chapter of Genesis, I'd like you to look up here, because something very significant happened to me 3 weeks ago, first time in my life. I was standing in a hospital, and I was standing in the delivery ward, maternity ward of one of the major hospitals in the Portland area. And now that's not unusual. Pastors go to hospitals all the time. But this was unique because in the room outside of the hallway where I was standing was my son and his wife. And they were anticipating the birth of their first child, which would make me a grandfather for the very first time. I wish you could have been there. The excitement in that hallway is like no excitement I've ever felt in any hospital room before. The grandmothers, Janelle's mom and Phil's mom, my wife Joy, who's here as well this morning, they were inside the birthing suite, and Phil was there, of course, with the doctor and the nurse, and Christy, who just introduced me, was outside with my dear friend Rick Sharon, whose daughter married my son. We were standing out there. And the three girls had their ears pressed against the closed door of the birthing suite, waiting for any sound that they could interpret and then share with us. As you saw these fellas, Rick and I, nervously waiting in the hallway, walking up and down the hall, anticipating something. Just tell us, what are they saying in there? What are they doing in there? And the girls would turn and say, I heard a sound. I heard a noise. And then we began to hear the grandmothers. We did not hear the mother. We did not hear the father. We did not hear the doctor or the nurse. But we could hear the grandmothers shouting, it's coming! It's coming! Stay with it, Janelle! Stay with it! And then all of a sudden we heard one of the grandmothers, and we're not to this day sure who it was first. It's a boy! It's a boy! Then the entire hallway cascaded with sounds from all of us shouting, it's a boy! Like there had never been a boy born in that hospital before. And then two 50-year-old guys, acting like they were school play friends out on the school ground, jumping up and down, high-fiving, hugging each other, saying, congratulations, grandfather, because this was the first time either one of us have ever been grandfathers before, so we were experiencing this wonderful thing. It was a significant moment in my life, and I'll never be the same. And in fact, Luke Braden was at the house the other night. He brought his parents over, and we were chatting, and I was holding him there, 3 weeks old, and he's got huge feet and big hands. He's probably about 6 foot six or 6 foot seven, my estimation, maybe 6'8", 6'9", 6'10", whatever the Lord would determine. And he said to me, in his own way, he said, just let them know that Northwest College, which will probably be Northwest University by the time he's 18, is on my list of possibilities. So just anticipate his coming. I'd like you to take a slice of a man's life who is a hero, a significant moment in his life. And just before time's sake, I'm just going to read just a phrase here from the 39th chapter of the book of Genesis, from one of the great heroes' stories of the Bible. In fact, if you were to look at the book of Genesis in an easy outline, there is basically four major events in the book of Genesis, and there are four major personalities. And here's the last personality of the book of Genesis that is so significant. It says in verse 2, the Lord was with Joseph. Would you say that with me? The Lord was with Joseph, and he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. Now, I'd like you to hang on to that for a moment, will you? I'd like you to think about that for the next 10 days. And the Lord was with Joseph. We have a form of communication, a form of storytelling that we use in our dialogue with people. We call it good news, bad news stories. You know what they are. You've heard them. And let me inflict a stupid one, but it just give you an idea of what I'm talking about. There's these two fellows, and they really loved to play baseball. That was the love of their life, baseball. And in fact, they would talk a lot about baseball. And one day they got into a conversation. They said, I wonder if there's really baseball in heaven. And they said, let's make a deal. Whoever dies first and goes to heaven, if at all possible, if in some way there's a way to communicate with the person who is left behind, we'll let the other person know if there is baseball in heaven. And so one day the one fellow died and he went to heaven. And I don't know how, if it's permitted or not, but somehow he communicated back to the guy on earth. And he said, I got good news and I've got bad news. And the guy said, well, what is it? He said, the good news is that there is baseball in heaven. And the guy said, well, what's the rest of the news? What's the bad news? And he said, the bad news is that you're signed up to pitch next Friday. It's kind of a stupid story, don't you think? Now, the reason I bring up this idea of good news, bad news, is when you look at the life of Joseph, it is a good news, bad news story. Just think for a moment. Joseph is his dad's favorite. That's very good. But his brothers hate his guts. That's very bad. Joseph's dad gives him a beautiful coat to wear. That's very good. But his brothers rip it off of him, sell him into slavery. That's very bad. Joseph works for Potiphar, who buys him in slavery. He's a high-ranking, wealthy Egyptian captain, official. And Potiphar likes him. Likes him a lot, and puts him in charge of everything he owns. And Joseph is a tremendous success, and he's handsome, and he's good-looking, kind of like Tom Cruise. At least my wife thinks that Tom Cruise is very handsome. But really, in person, he's kind of a puny little guy. And he needs a haircut, and he's not, in my opinion, not all that good-looking. I've tried to tell her that many, many times. So, Joseph is better looking than Tom Cruise. He's taller than Tom Cruise. And this is very good. But Potiphar's wife takes a liking to Joseph and tries to seduce him. And this is very bad. But Joseph refuses to give in. And this is very good. But Potiphar's wife gets furious, so she makes up a story of how Joseph tried to seduce her. this is very bad, and tells the story to her husband, Potiphar, who becomes angry and throws Joseph into prison. This also is very bad. But while Joseph is there, he meets a couple of Pharaoh's servants, and he interprets a dream for one of the servants and tells him exactly what's going to happen, that he's going to be released. And it comes true. And this is very good. And in part of telling this, he says, don't forget to remember me. And when you're released, and get me out. And the guy says, listen, when I get out, I'll make sure that and make the arrangements that you will be released. And this is very good. But the guy forgets and leaves Joseph in prison for 2 years. This is very bad. Now, the reason I bring this up is this is a description of Joseph's life. But this is also a description of your life and my life. The good news and the bad news story. Like all of us, Joseph has started out with a dream, and every one of you in this room has a dream of some sort. He had this dream that all the sheaves in the field were going to bow down and worship him. He had this dream that the stars in the sky would bow down and worship him, that he would reign over all of them, and that he was going to do great things, and that he would be a leader, and he would be in charge of a lot of stuff, and that he would make his mark on this world, and he would make his father very proud of him. After all, he wore that special coat that his dad had given him. But like all of us, Joseph woke up to a bad day, bad news. He was attacked by his brothers. He's sold to a slave group. He is carried off to Egypt. He's sold as a slave to a family he did not know. And verse 1 of the reading this morning, now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. And here Joseph is. He's penniless. He's powerless. He's friendless. He's homeless. And Joseph is about to learn what every one of us will learn sooner or later in life. And you could write this down in your notes. There will not be a test on this, but there will be a test in life on this. And this is what he learned. And every one of us will have to learn it. Joseph was about to learn that your heart is revealed and your character is forged when things don't go the way you planned or your dreams are not realized. That your heart is revealed. What's really in your heart when things are not going the way you anticipated that they would go. And your character is forged or molded when things don't turn out as you planned, when you face bad news. Now, every one of us in this room has faced some disappointment in life. Every one of us this morning in this chapel. And if you and I were to sit down one-on-one and just talk for a few minutes, I would venture to say that you and I could come up with some things that have happened in our lives that didn't turn out as we intended. Maybe coming to this college or university campus and taking a course that you were all set on, and when you got into it, you realized, this is bad news. This isn't what I anticipated. Maybe in a job that you have, it's not turning out like you wanted it to turn out. Maybe if you are married, and some of you are, your marriage has not been what you were thought it would be. Maybe in some other area of your life is something that you're facing even now that isn't what you expected it to be or what you planned it to be. And there are going to be times like that when life doesn't seem all that fair. When there are difficulties and trials and temptations and struggles and tragedies that come our way, and we don't seem to have an answer for that, and we're wondering, this isn't what I signed up for. This isn't what I planned for. And if you think that life will always make sense to you, then there is something wrong with you spiritually, because it doesn't always make sense to us. Life does not always turn out the way we planned. And Joseph did not know the end of the story when he faced this bad news. Just because it doesn't make sense to us, remember this. That doesn't mean that it doesn't make sense to God. And just because right now it doesn't make sense, doesn't mean that later it won't make sense in your life. That's the story of Joseph. You can put this verse down, Isaiah chapter 55, verses 8 and 9. The spokesman of God, the prophet of God, speaking on behalf of God, the words of God, to the people of God, said this, on behalf of God, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, and your ways are not always my ways, declares the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." I want to tell you that after 50 years of walking this earth, and for 45 of those years serving the Lord, there have been many times when things did not turn out as I planned. And I'm a planner. I have my process that I go through. I have the stuff I write down, the stuff that I want to get done. And generally there's interruptions, and sometimes there's great disappointments. But I have to have the confidence that it makes sense to God. In the mosaic of my life, God is still at work, and He's at work in your life. Because some of you today are sitting in this chapel, and you're contemplating your future. And you've come to this point in your life where maybe some of the things that you had planned to do have not come together yet, and they're not making sense, and you're wondering, what's the deal? What in the world's going on? Now, in the final moments that I have this morning, I want to suggest that there are three issues that you're going to all face, and I have faced them, and some of those that are here today are facing them now. And you're going to have to ask yourself, how am I going to handle this? How am I going to deal with this? There appears to be at least three crossroads in our lives when things don't seem to make sense. What am I going to do when things don't make sense? I'm going to suggest that crossroad number one is this, that you're going to face. Will I give up and quit? Will I give up and quit? If you looked at this text for a moment in verse 1, it says, "Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there." Joseph was far from home, separated from his father, betrayed by his brothers, surrounded by strangers. His dreams appeared to be dead. He is now a slave. And here he has to now face the first crossroad that each of us face when things don't make sense to us. And that is, will I be tempted to give up and quit? Will I hang it up? I didn't wrestle in high school. I played basketball and football. But I went to wrestling matches on occasion. And I remember that coaches used to have white rags that they used to, big towels wrapped up. And when a wrestler couldn't take it any longer, and the coach realized that he was in deep trouble, they would throw that towel onto the wrestling mat and it immediately would stop the match. And there are times when we say we want to throw in the towel, that's the kind of the idea, is we want to give up and quit. But verse 2 says, there's a phrase, "And the Lord was with Joseph, and he prospered, and he lived in the house of the Egyptian master." Now, even in a strange land, this is the first time in Joseph's life that we see his spiritual life taking place. It's being introduced to us here. What is he experiencing? Even in this moment when he felt like quitting, he experienced the presence of the Lord in his life. And that is a tremendous promise to each of us. Here is this extraordinary opportunity. Because God could see that if he would make it through this, if he would stay with it and not quit. Sometimes we get a job and we don't, you know, it's not the greatest job in the world. And we say, "Oh man, I'm just going to put it on autopilot and get through this until I can get out of this job to another." But Joseph could have done that, but he decided, "I'm going to be diligent in what God has given me to do right now." And as a result of his diligence, God prepares him and sets him up to be part of a plan that would be amazing. He would save his own family ultimately. He would be part of the picture, the big picture of God's redemptive plan. He would make him the strongest and most mighty leader of all of Egypt apart from Pharaoh. A stranger in a strange land who was faced with the temptation, a crossroad of giving up and quitting, who determined, "I will not quit, I will do my best with what God's called me to do right now." Even though he didn't know the end of the picture. Let me ask you this question. How many of you took piano lessons when you were a kid? Look at all these pianists. How many of you quit? Yeah, right. See, it's easier to quit than to keep with it, isn't it? It's easier to stop and get a donut than run another lap. It's easier to walk out of a room rather than to stay there and work out the difficulty between you and that other person. It's easier for people to leave marriages today than to say, listen, with God's help, we've got to have a resolve. I see this on a weekly basis as a pastor. People taking the easy way out. And there is a great temptation, even in the setting that you're in, to walk off this campus and say, I'll never come back. It hits every year about midterm. You can feel it. It hits everybody's experience about somewhere in the junior year of school when the social life begins to drop off and the studies become more important because the first year, or the only reason you're here, is to find out who else is here. And so you live in a social life until your folks get the first year's grades and realize that you've now flunked out of all the classes that they paid for and you're no longer eligible for any of the scholarships, so I guess I better get serious about life. And then somewhere around the junior year, there's this great temptation. Maybe I should just bag this whole thing and go down and work at Wendy's. Or I have a friend who didn't even go to college and they make a lot more money than I will ever plan to make. There's this temptation to give up and quit. But I want to tell you, in sticking with it, that's where God forms character in our lives. That's where God begins to mold us and shape us and prepare us for the big picture, for the big plan that he has. Now quickly, there's another crossroad that you have to face. And that is, will I give in to temptation? Will I give in to temptation? And in the story, in verse 7, now Joseph was well built and handsome. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, come to bed with me. Verse 8, but he refused. With me in charge, he told her, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? Just when you think it is as bad as it possibly could get, just when you think, you know, you've been moved away from your family and all of your resources and your security, and now you're faced with something even more, another crossroad. It's called temptation, the crossroad that every one of us will face in developing and shaping our character in life. This is how God works in our lives. He allows, he doesn't use temptation to destroy us, but he would allow circumstances to come to put us to the test in our lives. Temptation. Temptation. Will I give in to it? This second crossroad. It would have been very easy for Joseph to say, hey, where is God? I'm here far away. Nobody knows me. I have no family. I have no wife. I have no home. I have no life. I'm stuck here. And this woman's coming on to me. Who cares? Who will know? What difference will it really make? And here Joseph is put to the test. And here you and I are put to the test. Someone within the sound of my voice this morning is being put to the test when it comes to your sexual life, even now. You know that one day God spoke to your heart and ministered to you and made arrangements for you to come and be involved in this educational experience to prepare you for some sort of ministry that would affect many people's lives. But the enemy of your soul has you in a strange land, and he is putting before you the temptation of sexual involvement outside of marriage, the temptation of alcohol or drugs, or the temptation of that club that you love to hang out at. And yet, it could be the very thing that would destroy, because sin does destroy our lives. Those things can make a tremendous difference and destroy. That's why Paul said to young Timothy, flee immorality, he said. Don't play games with it. Run. And the Bible tells us that Joseph got up and he ran. He resisted. And so, ladies and gentlemen, look up here real quick. Look right up here at this beautiful face. And I want to tell you something. I don't care who you are, and where you are, and what position you ever have in life, you're going to come to this crossroad of temptation, and you're going to have to make the decision. Am I going to give in, or am I going to be able to develop a sense of resistance? Am I going to allow this to destroy my life, or am I going to resist and develop my life for the glory of God? Some of you are right there right now. I'm talking to you. The Lord has told me ahead of time that when I said this morning, there'll be some that are on that crossroad right now. And I want to challenge you to refuse to give in to it. Now, there's a third crossroad that I want to suggest quickly, and we'll close. And that crossroad is mentioned in the next chapter, but that is, will I give over to bitterness? Will I give over to bitterness? If you were to continue to read through, you would find how Joseph was set up, as I mentioned, and he was falsely accused, and he ends up in prison. I once heard a pastor say, I know God put me here, but I'm wondering if he forgot he left me here. There are those moments in life when you know you're in the will of God, but you're wondering if God remembers where he put you because you feel all alone. And if you were to read on, while Joseph was in prison, it says in verse 21, the Lord was with him, and he showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those that were held in prison, and he made him responsible for all that had been done. Now, the Lord didn't spare Joseph prison, but he was with him in prison. And here comes this third crossroad. Am I going to give over to bitterness? Do you know that you could come and sit in these classes? You could walk the aisle in May and receive your degree. You could be called by the largest church in America to come and lead a ministry, or you could be called by the largest corporation. You could start your own business. You could go through life and still have a seed of bitterness in your life over something that happened a long time ago. It's possible you could even be a professor in this great established college and carry bitterness. It's possible that you could pastor a church and be bitter towards people because of things that happened. Now put this in your mind. Joseph ministers to these two fellows. One is a baker and one is a cupbearer. And he tells them to the cupbearer, that's the guy that tasted the drink, the wine before the king would take it, or Pharaoh would take it, or Potiphar would take it, whoever was in charge. And if it had poison in it, of course he died. So it was one of those jobs everybody wanted. And he said they had dreams and they were trouble. He said, you know, God could reveal to me what has happened. And he said, you know, in 3 days to the cupbearer, you're going to be released. And then he said to the baker, he said, in 3 days, they're going to cut your head off. And the baker looked at Joseph and said, I'm never going to have you interpret another dream for me again in my life. That's it. And it all came about. The guy forgot about Joseph. He promised, I'll tell them to release you. It wasn't a day. It wasn't a week. It wasn't a month. It was 2 years that he was there. 2 years. But in the midst of all of that, Joseph refused to be bitter. And I want to suggest to you that there's going to be a crossroad, but don't give over to bitterness. Resist it. Resist it. When Joy and I were youth pastors, I remember one night the doorbell rang and I went to the door, and there were these five college students, many of your ages, sharp kids in our ministry. I said, hey, can we come on in? We said, sure, come on in. We love having you guys come over. They came in. They sat down in my couch that I bought, my chair that I purchased. And they said, we wanted to talk to you. I said, what would you like to talk about? And for the next hour and a half, they just explained to me how poor of a youth pastor I was to them. How my teaching wasn't very good and wasn't very deep. It wasn't taking them to the deeper things of God. How my organization was poor. How they went on and on. I mean, they're sitting in my house and my furniture telling me this stuff. I didn't even invite them over. They just came over. And they went on and on and on and on about it. Now, I had a choice that night as I escorted them to the door and thanked them for coming. Either be bitter or better. At first, I have to tell you, the natural tendency was to be kind of angry. Who do these people think they are? I went to college. I've been in the ministry. I have a great heritage. Or be better. And I want to tell you, I decided, Lord, maybe they're right. Maybe I need to do better. And I made a commitment. To this day, all of them are my friends. And the interesting thing is I pastor now for 15 years the church that I was a youth pastor at, where all those kids went. Many of them are in the church now. And I don't have any bitterness towards them whatsoever. The only reason I told the story isn't because I'm carrying bitterness. I just wanted to let you know those things happen. And you have to make a decision. And somebody's going to say something to you in the next 7 days, and you're going to have to make a decision. Maybe it's your parents. Maybe it's your friends. Maybe it's somebody in your... You've got to make a choice. Am I going to be bitter about that? Or am I going to allow God to take that experience and forge my life and character? So that's the crossroads you have to go. You know, Joseph's story turns out to be tremendous. But he didn't know that. It's a good news, bad news story. And this generation that you represent seems to look at life in a kind of a hopeless sense. But I'm here to tell you, you're part of a big mosaic picture that God has in store for you. And you know, this book is a good news, bad news book. God creates man. That's the good news. Sin comes into the world. That's the bad news. So he sends his son to die on a cross for our sins. That's the good news. And they kill him and put him in a grave. That's the bad news. But he raises on the third day. That's the good news. And it's a good news ending story in your life. Now, if you were to travel today, if we were to get on a plane and we say, hey, let's just go to Iran, wouldn't that be fun? But when the Shah of Iran was building a huge palace, he called in the top architect. And I am told that there was an entrance of the palace that was designed to have mirrors from the ceiling to the floor. Huge mirrors. They were so large that they had to have them imported from a European glass-making company. And so they designed the building, they built the building, and they waited for the shipment. And they were alerted, and the architect came, and the designers came, and the installers came, and they pulled out these huge crates. And when they opened them up, these huge mirrors in the crates were all broken in thousands of pieces. Millions of dollars in broken glass. And they sat there, disturbed, distressed, defeated. When one of the designers had an idea, and they put on the wall some kind of adhesive, and carefully, one by one, I am told, they took the broken glass and they put it on the wall. And some of you may have seen it in pictures or seen it in person. And they said, as you stood back, it looked like a wall full of diamonds. And that's what God does in our lives when he forges us. He takes us, we sang it earlier, and there is a breaking process, and we're saying, what's going on here? We feel like quitting. We feel like giving up. We feel like giving in to temptation. After all, we might as well deserve this. We feel like becoming bitter. But God says, step back, and he'll take your life, and he takes my life in those broken moments, and he puts them back together, and he does something remarkable. As the musicians come, I'd like to invite you to bow your heads in prayer with me today. Father, you're doing something marvelous in our lives today, and we thank you for the privilege of standing before these students. We come humbly before you today. We haven't come with the eloquence of man's words, but we've hopefully come in the power of the Spirit. Would you stand across this auditorium this morning? And before you head out, go to the spring break, which you so deserve. Some of you will travel. Some of you will stick around here. I remember my spring break, my sophomore year in college. It was a very important time in my life. It was a transition time in my life. And before you go, some of you just would like to come and lay some things at the altar this morning. As the musicians lead us, I invite you to come just for a few moments because I know you've got assignments and classes to go, but would you just come and stand here as an act of commitment? Lord, before I leave this campus this week and head out, I just want to lay some things at the altar. Some bitterness. Some failure. Maybe you've given in to temptation. Maybe this is a great place to just come and say, Lord, today I start over. Maybe you're asking the question, why? What's going on in my life? Why? It feels like a bad news life. God's got a good news ending. Why don't you come and just stand here at the altar as we sing. You come and stand with me. I'll pray for you before you go today.
Give you my life. give you my soul. I live for you alone. Every breath that I take, every promise I'm waiting.